You're listening to RTI Audio, powered by Rocky Top Insider. This is the RTI Press Pass with Rick Butler and Ryan Shumpert.
Insider Press Pass. Today is Wednesday, May the 4th. My name is Rick Butler, joined to my left by my good friend Ryan Shumpert. Hey, today is a beautiful day, and we are here ready to talk a little Tennessee sports action. There's been quite a bit going on in the world of Tennessee lately. So, hey, we're going to take the next half hour or so and get you caught up to speed on everything going on in the Tennessee sports world. As I mentioned a minute ago, Ryan to my left, good afternoon, my friend. What's going on?
Not much. Glad to be back on the mic.
Yeah? Are you, now, I would be remiss if I didn't say, you know, may the 4th be with you. Are you taking part in Star Wars Day at all?
My roommate is, like, huge Star Wars fan. So, I mean, by taking part, making fun of him a little bit today.
Oh.
Trying to poke the bear a bit, but that's the only way.
Did you ever watch or have a lot of interest yourself?
Not really. I'd seen the first one, like, in a long time ago, and then I've seen a couple of the more recent ones that have come out, but never been a huge Star Wars fan.
It doesn't sound like you're too fired up about it.
No, certainly not.
Well, then, hey, let's go ahead and get that out of the way and get into let's start with a little football. I mean, we've started with baseball plenty over the last couple weeks or so. Start with a little football because going back to last night, Tennessee brings in a major commitment from the transfer portal for this upcoming season. Tennessee lands former five-star recruit and USC transfer Brew McCoy. I mean, this was big. This is a big-time recruit for Tennessee right here in the middle of the spring as the Vols are starting to, after they wrapped up spring camp about, you know, sometime last month. Ryan, what was your big initial reaction to this?
Kind of finally, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you knew... You'd heard rumors about this for a while, and obviously he visited Tennessee back last month, and there really hadn't even seemed to be – it didn't seem like going back to USC was really an option for him, and there didn't seem to be a ton of other schools that he was actively talking to. So it kind of seemed like this is what was going to happen, but it had been so long, and he hadn't made a decision that you kind of had that doubt of, you know, maybe not, this isn't what's going to happen. But when it happened, that was kind of my first thought of, okay, it is official, he's going to be in Tennessee. Be playing for Tennessee next year.
Yeah, he makes the post on Instagram last night. All right, so let's give you a little bit of background information on Tennessee's newest receiver, Brew McCoy. 6'3", 220 pounds. He is a unit on the football field. There's no doubt about it. A wide receiver, but going in as a recruit, right, in high school, he was an athlete because he was athletic just about at everything he did. Had a redshirt freshman season in 2019, his first year in Los Angeles after an illness. However, did return to the field in 2020, but that was the COVID-shortened season, right? So Brew did get a chance to play in the field, but it wasn't really in the right environment that you would expect, that you would project, right? All that kind of stuff. So his final statistics for that 1 year, 2020, were 236 yards, 2 touchdowns on 26 receptions, and then 2021, so last season, he did not see any action on the field after a legal situation unfolded in the summer, in the fall, kind of in that transition time, and again, just did not see the field because of that. So a guy who's been in the college rankings for 3 seasons now, a guy who's been out there in Los Angeles, but a guy who really only has 1 year of experience to his name, and that was in a shortened season. Well, what do you think this guy can bring to Tennessee here in this first year?
I think that's a good question because he's clearly extremely talented.
Yeah.
I mean, what he was able to do in that limited COVID year. I mean, you mentioned numbers. That's just in 5 games. You got to remember Pac-12 didn't start playing until a lot later after the SEC did. So those numbers are a little bit better than they maybe sound coming off. But overall, the story of his career has been the stuff off the field. He goes to Texas, then decides he wants to go to USC before, you know, after that. Before he even gets to this first fall, he early enrolled at Texas in January, transfers to USC that summer, who was kind of the other main team in his recruitment. I believe he was even committed to there for a while. And then you mentioned it freshman year red shirts, and then this past year the legal issues that kept him from, I don't think he was ever officially kicked off the USC team, but he was never, he wasn't with the USC team during
last season.
He
did not return.
Yeah, he never returned to the program. So it's kind of more of a potential thing right now when you look at McCoy, but he has a lot of potential. He's extremely talented. He fits what Tennessee needs. Tennessee needs a receiver that can go out and play out wide on the other side of Cedric Tillman. They have a handful of guys that you feel like can kind of slide into that role that Valus Jones Jr. leaves in the slot, but not a ton of obvious candidates out wide, and I think he's one that fits in really well there. And then when you put talent into this Josh Heupel system with a quarterback already in place, I think there's a good reason to be optimistic about it, but I think just still, since you haven't seen all that production on the field, there's a little bit of hesitance or a little bit of let's wait and see and put it all together before you completely buy in.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of my reaction here in this first 24 hours has been, and really I think that you hit the nail on the head a second ago when you said that finally, because you're right, this is something that we've known about for over a month now. He was visiting in Knoxville in late March, so you had all of April to go with this decision. And I think you're right. You look at what Brew McCoy has just from a skill set perspective, and you think about, you know, the options that Tennessee could have on the table, putting out Cedric Tillman and Brew McCoy on the outside. Two dudes who are 6 foot three, two dudes who are over 210 pounds. That's a dangerous combination for the style of play that Tennessee has. And hey, we saw last year that Josh Heupel was not afraid to start a first year player at Tennessee in his offense, right? We saw that with Javonte Payton, and he ended up being one of Tennessee's primary guys to start out games last year for Tennessee. So I think that you see what he can potentially bring to the table. You see it in a lot of maybe more of a projection, because you're right. There's been a lot of time that he has spent in college where it has not been on the football field. But you do think about if some of those off-the-field issues can settle down, if this is a guy who can really just put his head down, get to work with the right people in place, I think this is a great talent that Tennessee brings up in the portal, and just strengthens this USC pipeline that they've had, right?
Yeah, really.
I mean, it has been ridiculous over the last couple of years. You start with Valus Jones Jr., and that's in the Pruitt era. So, you know, Heupel and his team weren't there yet, but that's the first to come. Then you have defensive lineman Caleb Tremblay come over. You have kicker Chase McGrath come over. Now Brew McCoy is the fourth in the last couple of years. Pipeline is strong from the West Coast.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. I have a buddy who has graduated from USC, and it feels like it's once a year I'm texting him about somebody. You know, what do you think about him? And it's funny. He's a Bears fan, so he even, with Valus this week getting drafted by them, he even came back and said, all right, what do I need to know about Valus for the 2 years?
There you go.
The 2 years he was in Knoxville. So you're right. It's been a very kind of strange pipeline to be developed, but one that's been pretty fruitful to Tennessee so far. I mean, obviously Valus was a star for Tennessee, and those other two guys played, you know, major roles. Chase was the starting kicker last year. Will likely be the same again this year. So it's been a fruitful pipeline for Tennessee, and they hope it continues. And I think, you know, even this was really early in the offseason when Brew McCoy just entered the transfer portal, but I know Valus was, you know, posting some stuff on Instagram story, you know, follow me to Tennessee, or, you know, follow that pipeline. So certainly one.
Well, and you got to think that that's a big factor, right? And granted, we're not either one of those people, so we don't know what's actually inside their minds, but you got to think that when you have a player or multiple people that you were teammates with at once at college, and hey man, you have seen them go and find success at a different place, but you can also have those you know, man-to-man stories and be like, hey, you know, what is it actually like over there? I would imagine that, you know, Valus Jones Jr., Caleb Chase, right, they have talked to him and said, hey, this is what Tennessee has that maybe we weren't entirely getting at USC, or hey, here's at least the places that we have found strengths or advantages being here at Tennessee, and this is a place that you could come to. I think just that player-to-player recruiting, it's a very valuable aspect that you've seen from Tennessee here.
Definitely, and no selling point would be better than just for McCoy to look at Valus' career stats. And
yes.
The explosion that he had in his first year playing for Heupel, I think that probably, of all those conversations...
It made him a whole lot of money in the draft.
Yes, of all the pipeline, all the things that Brew McCoy could have talked to those guys about, I think that's probably the one that, you know, you look at it, maybe the most beneficial in getting him to Knoxville.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, well, let's stick on the recruiting trail a little bit. Let's go back a couple days ago, though, to Monday. Tennessee gets a big announcement. Ryan, Ohio State defensive back Andre Turrentine announced that he will be transferring to Tennessee. Defensive back formerly at Ohio State. Oh, tell me a little bit about what you know about Andre Turrentine, a former Nashville recruit. Is that correct?
Yes. And went to Innsworth School in Nashville, and it was a big recruit. I think the number 4 player out of the state of Tennessee, according to 247 Sports. Committed pretty early in the process, back in, I guess, what would have been spring of 2020, kind of right before Jeremy Pruitt and that Tennessee kind of stretch where they dominated the recruiting trail. So I think in some ways, like McCoy, it's, you know, we haven't seen him play at Ohio State. It's on potential. But I think the big difference here is that while McCoy was a guy in that class of 2019, Turrentine is class of 2021. So he's just spent 1 year. He redshirted it. While he's a transfer, it's almost like getting a recruit because he's going to come to Knoxville with 4 years of eligibility left. And it's kind of the best of both worlds because it's like he's a recruit. You have 4 years of eligibility.
Right.
But at the same time, he's been in the college program for a year, not Tennessee's, but a very successful college program in Ohio State. He knows how things are run. He's had that extra year of being in a college strength and conditioning program that we know is super important. And then I think on the field, his versatility is big. It was a safety coming out of high school. I think that's probably where he'll start at. But when you looked at some Ohio State practice reports from last year, he was working both at corner and at safety. So certainly some versatility in the back end, and Tennessee could really use that. So that's a big position of need. We talked about it coming out of spring practice, and I think Turrentine's a guy that can come in and help them right away, and at the very least is going to be a guy that's going to be able to grow into a player that contributes for Tennessee during his career.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great pickup for Tennessee, and really just, Ryan, for a lot of the reasons that you said a second ago. It's a guy who brings experience to a position, a group where you need depth, right?
Yeah.
No doubt about it. I think that what you get when you bring in Andre Turrentine is a little bit of a do-over as well. I think that we've seen in the recruiting world, and let's just talk about Heupel's tenure in Tennessee specifically. We saw last year his first class, the 2022, it was a little bit lacking on in-state players, and that was certainly a point of criticism for people. It seems like that's been a point of emphasis this year, right? I think when you look at Tennessee's 2023 class, at least half or maybe even potentially more, I don't have it in front of me, but are from the state of Tennessee, so they really are focusing there. But this is the type of recruit that you get a little bit of a do-over with, because this was a very talented player from the mid-state. This was a guy who grew up in Tennessee, so now you're bringing him back home to play. I think that's a big type of player for Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, Innsworth is a school that produces a lot of talent, so yeah. Another guy, you know, if things go well for him in Knoxville, it kind of increases that pipeline and certainly could pay dividends down the road in future recruitments.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are two big recruits for Tennessee this week.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we talked about it that coming out of the season, Tennessee was a little lackluster in what it was able to do in the transfer portal. I mean, I think the Isaiah Nayer decommitment was a big part of that.
Yeah.
And we knew Tennessee was going to be aggressive in trying to get some guys after spring practice, and I think they got two really good ones this week. Probably, I would say, that to date, they're two best guys they've added in the portal.
Yeah, and I think two guys that again, and we talked about Brew with the, you know, with the off-the-field stuff, and it's a guy that you want to, you know, put his head down and get to work. I think that they do flash potential for you, you know, soon. I think that these are two guys who could have an immediate impact. Maybe not necessarily immediate, but could be in the near future.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think McCoy is no doubt.
Yes,
the one that's
kind of the one.
Yeah, and in Turrentine, we'll see what he does, but certainly opportunities. I mean, Trayvon Flowers had a really, really good spring, and you have both Jalen McCullough back too, but neither of those guys were stars by any means last year, and I think if there's opportunities for him to earn some playing time at safety, and if not, I mean, you look at the corner spots. I would be surprised if he starts out wide, but the star spot, Tennessee has to replace Theo Jackson, and I think he's a guy that could certainly factor there too.
You know, so when we're looking at, and we've talked about a lot of stories like this recently, and really think about all throughout the month of April, going forward into March, think about going back into March. We've been talking a lot about Tennessee's recruiting lately, and specifically in football, but also a little bit in basketball and digging into the transfer portal there and other kind of stuff. You posted about this on our website a couple days ago, but there's a really fascinating article that came out from On3 with the title, The Top 5 Most Ambitious NIL Collectives, right? And it's a very interesting business that's going on right now, and one of the prominent ones here in Knoxville is Spire Sports Group. And actually, in this On3 Sports article, Spire Sports Group was ranked the number one most ambitious NIL collective. And I found that really fascinating. And again, if you want to go and read more about this, you can go and find it on our website. But also, Ryan, we are lucky enough to have a good friend of ours have a little bit of insight into this situation. So without any further ado, bring in our good friend, Bob Baskerville. He is one of the top dogs here at RTI. He is a good friend of ours. But also, Bob, you were telling us earlier, you have a little bit of insight, right? Or at least a little bit of interaction with Spire.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for letting me come on, guys.
Welcome in.
Welcome.
Our executive producer now has a microphone.
Yes. No, I just wanted to take a couple of minutes because I am in a position with my other role besides RTI, where I'm a principal in a production company that does video and digital production. And I've been partnering with Spire on creating some video assets for them. You've seen some. We've posted some.
Yep.
You know, the first 60-second sizzle that we saw from Nico Iamaliava. Did I get it right?
Yes.
Even a few weeks later, we still usually just call him Nico. But anyway, we're helping create those assets, and Spire's been a good partner for us. And I think what's interesting and what my observation is relative to the article that was posted on 3 that we reposted and just all the chatter that's going on right now relative to NIL, as best as we can see it, I think that Tennessee's in good hands. You know, the way that On3 characterizes Spire as ahead of the game, I really find that to be the case. They've been really good partners. They don't claim to know it all. They really don't. They understand that this is uncharted territory, but boy, they are dogged, and they are representing, you know, a donor base and a university that wants to win more than ever. And I think that that's what's really interesting to see and exciting to see. I mean, I think that what will be interesting is what happens now that it was just, what, last week that Governor Lee put into law, if you will. He's relaxed some of the restrictions
right.
that NILs have with in the state with state-run universities. So I think that's going to help as well. And I look at all of that, and I think, again, what I do wonder is what's it all going to look like in a couple of years? I mean, you can find articles everywhere. The Athletic just put one out about, you know, that there's, you know, unnamed athletic directors around the country who are saying this is going to, you know, decimate college sports as we know it. I do think it's wreaking havoc, and some of it's not in a good way, but I do think that there's, you know, I do think, you know, conversely, Ubben puts an article out that says it's a good thing, you know, because
sure.
a lot of this was happening anyway. We just, you know, couldn't be talked about. But I think that, you know, what we'll see is long term that that's going to continue to benefit some of these universities. And I do think for Tennessee and for the Tennessee fan base, who obviously we like to win. There's no question about it. What fan base doesn't? But this one is, boy, it's more vocal and rabid than a lot of them. And I think that they're being heard is the good news. The question becomes, when does if the horse is already out of the barn, how are you going to pull that back in? If there's going to be greater regulation down the line, what's that going to mean? And again, for a company like Spire, they're out there already, and they're kind of pioneering. And for me, I think when the NCAA comes back around and tries to put some guardrails on this, I think they're going to be in a very good position where it's not going to undercut them, you know? And
sure.
I think that that's important. So I think that's all good for all the University of Tennessee sports down the line. It's just, how do you continue to manage that effectively and not manage the noise of all the other things that we're seeing the headlines about, you know, the kid, Isaiah Wong from Miami, who's like, give me more NIL money or I'm transferring and all these other things. That's the stuff that's going to be very, very tough to navigate. That's not necessarily Spire's problem per se. That's going to be the NCAA's and the member universities.
So is this something where Spire and the Tennessee head coaches, do they work together in producing or just working together to What's the word I'm looking for? Sure, to facilitate just conversations with some of these recruits.
Oh, I think that's definitely going to be the case. Well, and more than anything, it'll be more access to, let's call it what it is. It'll be more access to the donor base, in terms of, I should say, access to the coaches. That's the other part. That'll be important. The part I'm still interested in seeing is how it plays out with the coaches' interaction with the athletes and the recruits. How much more does that open it up now? Yeah. And you guys, I know, have been paying close attention to it as well. So you may have some insight there too, but I think that's going to be another one that we have to watch.
You mentioned that, Spire doesn't have all the answers, and I don't think there's a coach. I don't think there's an administrator. I don't think there's a collective group in the country that has all the answers, but you look at just where they've grown and kind of developed from the fall, and this On3 article is a pretty good example of it. Of they seem to be ahead of the trend. Why do you think that is, and why do you think they were able to kind of, Tennessee and Spire specifically, was able to kind of get its ducks in a row so quickly?
Well, again, I think some of it goes back to some very influential donors and business leaders who really want to see the University of Tennessee thrive. And we've seen this happen before, all the way back to, if you were, watching Friday Night Lights on TV, you would see the business.
Buddy Garrity.
Yeah, Buddy Garrity, right?
There you go.
That they would be kind of pulling the puppet strings, from behind the scenes. Well, there's people in town that they want to be involved in this, and now they've got their chance to really be involved and be known to be involved. So I think that's one thing that's probably, I don't know how you put it. Is that a positive? I guess it is. I mean, I guess it really helps the effort. But I think that's kind of, for me, that's kind of the leader, is that you just get it out in the open. And we have always known our fan base and our boosters to be just incredibly passionate. And now we're going to see it.
I think, your point, is that a good thing? I think on service, it's definitely a good thing. But more importantly, it's a good thing when you have the structure to keep things aligned, with starting with the athletic director to chancellor, and then going down to, and now Spire seemingly having a good handle on things. Because I think you have seen at Tennessee over the past decade where that sort of role and influence hasn't been a good thing, because the leadership, hasn't been effective top to bottom.
Yeah, and the other thing I would say, I agree with all of that, is we're well situated from the perspective that the university is led at the top by someone who is at their core a business person. Okay, I think more than ever, that's critical. More than ever.
Sure.
And I think, Danny White's kind of a newer age athletic director, too. There's a lot of that acumen there as well. And so I think of those two at the top of this thing, and that gives me comfort, too, because I think my point is they're savvy, but they're also going to understand when it's like, hey, man, we can't cross a line, and this could be crossing a line, whether that's a behavior by an athlete or whether it's a behavior by a booster, or the school, I think that gives me some comfort as well.
Definitely. And it's funny you bring up Randy Boyd, because I remember in Omaha last year at the College World Series, seeing him walking on the street with a Tennessee baseball jersey on. And I was like, I don't know how many university presidents there are in America that,
sure,
one, probably care as much about the success of the athletic program as Randy Boyd, and two, it's just casually walking around in a baseball jersey, not even a golf shirt or a shirt and tie down the streets of Omaha.
I think that, if I'm remembering correctly, when he did an interview when Tennessee was playing at the Smokies Park, pretty sure he was also wearing something Tennessee related, of course, big environment there. That is also fascinating. And, Bob, of course, when we look at some of these recruits of the last couple of weeks, and we kind of see them, especially when they're coming down to it and they're about to make their decisions, you've seen with two recruits, one going towards Tennessee's favor and one not going towards Tennessee's favor, it seems like they've had, some similar schools that have made the mix. And when you look at this top five, which we'll read out in a minute, it seems like that's kind of, you can see that is where some of the progression is happening. I know, thinking about Nico, Tennessee, he committed to, but Oregon was another contender for him. Then you look at four-star wide receiver Kyler Casper, who committed to Oregon last week over Tennessee. Now, when you look at this this article from On3 Sports, the most ambitious NIL collectives in the country, we talked about a second ago, Tennessee number one, Oregon's number two with Division Street, Miami, number 3 with John Ruiz. Florida, number 4 with Gator Collective and Gator Guard. And then you have Texas, number 5 with Horns with Hart. But then you got a couple honorable mentions that are still right here in SEC territory. South Carolina, Clemson, West Virginia, another one from Texas. So it's really interesting to see how these are starting to unfold and really the immediate impact that we are starting to see from it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's one of the things that gives me a little bit of concern is, so we have one that's embedded with the University of Tennessee with Spire, and yep, it's obviously getting a lot of acclaim, if you will. But it's no secret that you've mentioned the University of Texas, that they have 4 collectives.
Yeah, okay? Florida has 2.
Yeah, and I worry about that, okay? It's like, again, right now we're in a situation where we have one who is, you know, apparently getting it right is whatever right means at this point, but it is considered to be doing all the right things. And you start to bring other players in, that means it gets competitive. It runs the risk of getting sloppy. At the same time, there's a lot of athletes who want NIL money. And the question is, from a load balancing perspective, is one enough? I don't know. You know, those are other things we're still learning. For an SEC school, a Power 5 conference school like Tennessee, it may not be. And then the question becomes, how's that other one come in and how do they play?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's...
Are they competing? Are they working together? You know, kind of what right. does it look like on a day-to-day basis? And I would imagine that from some days to others, you know, that even sometimes changes based on the day.
That's right. That's right.
You know, that is all very fascinating. And certainly, you know, again, and I think a lot of what we talked about today, this is something that is unfolding at a very rapid rate that we're all trying to wrap our heads around, right? The people who are not only reading about it and watching from a fan perspective, but also the people who are in the thick of it, right? And they're trying to do the best what they can. And obviously, we've seen that Tennessee has had a lot of early success in the immediate realm. But it's going to be really interesting to see where this thing starts to head over the future, like you're saying, and how long Tennessee can kind of hold on to one of those top spots, and especially with the Spire Sports Group, you know, once these other collectives and once these other organizations start to see what these successful ones are doing, start to implement those kind of ideas and, you know, just guidelines and things into their own practices, how is Tennessee and Spire Sports Group going to be able to, you know, how are they going to be working to stay at the top? I can't wait to see how this all unfolds.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because kind of what we've talked about, this is all so new that Tennessee has been ahead of the curve and they've kind of jumped out and figured some things out that I think a lot of people haven't. And naturally, whether that's following, you know, Spire and Tennessee's lead or just figuring it out over time, schools are going to catch up, collectives are going to catch up to what's going on. How does Tennessee continue to, or Spire, continue to push that envelope and keep Tennessee at the top of the NIL universe?
Yeah, no doubt about it. It is going to be fascinating to see it all unfold, and it's going to be fascinating to continue talking about it as we go. Of course, you can check out all of our thoughts, and you can check out what we've been talking about this whole time, both Ryan's telling of it and the original link to the On3 article. You can go and check all that out at RockyTopInsider.com. It is right there under the football tab. And then, of course, I want to say a big thank you to our good friend Bob Baskerville for taking a minute out of your day to share some of your knowledge and just kind of your thoughts on this whole situation. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Thank you, guys.
Hey, don't go anywhere. We will be back in one quick minute.
We'll be right back. And now, back to the show.
All right, here we go. Welcome back into the Press Pass, powered by Rocky Top Insider, here on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Rick Butler, Ryan Shumpert hanging out with you as we are transitioning to a little bit of baseball. Ryan, we have a new college baseball record holder right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I thought about maybe spicing up the intro or, you know, a tease for it or no, but no. That was an incredible moment on Sunday that will be in the history books for probably a good long while. Tennessee relief pitcher Ben Joyce on Sunday afternoon against Auburn hauls back and launches a 105.5-mile-per-hour fastball. I almost just start to laugh when I say it out loud because it's hard to think about, and that right there is the new fastest pitch in college baseball history. Ryan, you were at the park for when this event occurred. Was there any, did people kind of know what was going on? Was there a feel in the crowd?
See, yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, there
People
was
knew
like
he
a,
was throwing hard.
Yeah, I mean, there was like a palpable buzz when he threw that pitch. Like there was definitely a kind of like hush over the crowd or like an awe after he did it. But on the scoreboard, on the scoreboard at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, it just said 104. So I don't think people at the time knew it was the fastest pitch ever. And like you said, Tennessee, on their two official systems they have in the dugout, Yacker Tracker had it at 105.5. Yacker. That's what they gave it to. That's what the SID had access to during the game. And then their other one, which is just called Stalker, and Tony Vitello postgame said it's their most accurate one, had it at 105 flat. So maybe not 105.5, but to the people who were doubtful that that was accurate at all, their most accurate one still had it at 105.
And yeah.
Just remarkable. I mean, it was a sight to behold, and really Ben Joyce's whole entire outing on Sunday was by far the best of his career, going four innings, just one base runner against him, came in a jam in the sixth inning, got out of it. I mean, that was special to watch. I mean, I think I've said it before, or maybe it's just a conversation to you, when Ben Joyce gets on the mound, no matter if it's a midweek game or not, I mean, it is stop what you're doing if you're working on something in the press box, and it's must watch.
You go back to when they were in Houston, right? Yeah. And we have that picture on RTI's Twitter of the whole UCLA baseball team, right, crowding around the dugout when they weren't even playing, just to see Ben Joyce on the mound. Okay, so what do you think about, you know, that performance on Sunday? Is that a, I don't want to say a sign of things to come for him, because, again, it's not like he just broke out in a Tennessee's right rotation out of nowhere. But is this a jumping off point for Ben Joyce? Is this kind of a thing that you look at and you say, you know what, Tennessee's been a little bit slow with him throughout the year at certain times, but man, they're really starting to ramp him up here towards the end of the regular season. Is he going to be a big factor in what Tennessee wants to do this postseason?
100%. I mean, I think Tony Vitello even said as much after the game that, you know, if you're looking at neutral, you're saying, hey, maybe those coaches are being a little too cautious with him or a little too slow bringing him along. And Tony likes to do that kind of, especially after a win,
yeah,
where he can self depreciate a little bit, maybe play the,
it's good humor,
play the, I don't know what I'm doing card. It's like coach number one team in the country. But even he kind of wised up at the end and he said he's going to be at his best in May and June. And that we may not be geniuses, but that was the plan. And you had texted me, earlier this week, said, hey, do you think Joyce could hit 106 at some point this year? And my initial thought when you texted me that, because skeptic at heart, was probably not. But then I started thinking about things, and I said,
maybe.
And I said, well, I probably would have said the same thing about 105 before Sunday. And you mentioned that he hasn't thrown a ton of innings. Tennessee has slowly built him up as the year's gone on. And then it's naturally, pitchers typically, as their arm gets more loose, as the weather gets warmer, that's when they throw their fastest. And I think you see that pretty frequently, that once you get into June, once you get into late May, as long as those aren't starting pitchers who have been taxed severely over the season and their arm's starting to kind of be on the downhill,
yeah,
that's when they'll throw their fastest. And Joyce is not going to be on that downhill. So I don't know if it'll happen. The skeptic in me says no. But once I kind of started thinking about it and really putting some thought to it, I do think it's possible.
You know, we ran that poll yesterday on Twitter, 825 votes. By the way, that's why you need to be following us on all social media platforms. We are always going to be doing stuff like this. 825 votes. Do you think that Ben Joyce will break the all-time fastest pitch this season and top the 106-mile-per-hour mark? 77.2% of the audience says yes. So, we'll see.
A lot more optimists than the Vol fan base.
Yeah, a little bit. I can't believe it. That's funny. All right, Ryan, so a little bit of a non-traditional weekend coming up, not your average Friday, Saturday, Sunday series with Kentucky, and this is going to be in Lexington. Instead, it's going to be starting tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. What can we kind of look to expect with the series with the Wildcats?
Yeah, well, really, all the last three of Tennessee's weekend series and regular season are Thursday, Friday, Saturday, like that. So people just need to start adjusting their calendars for that now.
Get used to it.
Get the heads up, because that's how it's going to be down the stretch. And, yeah, it's the Kentucky team that a little bit better than they were last year, but still the bottom of the league. I think this is one that Tennessee, if they come in and play the way they're capable, will get another sweep, stay unbeaten in true road games this year, which is crazy to think about. Two series left, they have a chance to not lose a game, a true road game all year. So I think really more what I'm going to be interested in watching is what does the starting pitching look like? Vitello said following the midweek win over Alabama A&M that Chase Burns will start on Thursday night despite, you know, just one day less of rest. But the rest of the weekend still up in the air. Chase Dolander returned through nine pitches against Alabama A&M on Tuesday night. He could potentially start. He could potentially come out of the bullpen. But that's probably the number one thing that I'm going to be interested to follow in this weekend. And I guess the last thing of what to expect, I think there'll be a good contingent of all fans up in Lexington, maybe even enough to outnumber the locals.
Oh, that could be wildly fascinating.
Yeah.
Huh. You know, on coming up this Friday morning, Bob and I are going to take Ryan. We're going to stick him in the car. We're going to send him on his way up to Lexington. So he will be there on Friday and Saturday. Make sure you are following Rocky Top Insider on Twitter to be able to follow all just the live coverage from inside of that stadium. But otherwise, Ryan, we will be it'll be fascinating to watch this week and just see what happens and see how Tennessee can continue to move towards the close of this regular season.
Yeah, and we kind of start getting on looking at SEC clinching marks. Tennessee can clinch the East this weekend if a few things break their way. I mean, it's probably unlikely, but they could potentially clinch the SEC if Auburn plays well and gets some wins over Arkansas. So we're kind of starting to get in that range of watching and counting down the numbers and counting down the wins for Tennessee to clinch its first SEC title since the mid-90s and its first SEC East title since last season.
There you go. That is a loaded episode of the Press Pass powered by Rocky Top Insider here on Wednesday. Check back in next week. We'll be right back here on the same day as always to talk about what else is going on in the Tennessee sports world. Obviously breaking down this Kentucky series coming up this weekend, but there will just be so much more to get into. So make sure you do not want to miss it. Hey, make sure you're also following Rocky Top Insider on all the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. Make sure you are there following it all because we are bringing you the news each and every week. We will see you back next week. For Ryan Shumpert, for Rick Butler, this is the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass.